Hi, this is Tom Wheeler. I'm in Washington, D.C., where I am involved in the development of new technology and also the president of the Foundation for the National Archives. And you're listening to Speaking of History.
The Eagle has landed.
You are about to embark upon the Great Crusade.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
I consider myself the luckiest man.
I have a dream today.
That's the only thing.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Hello, welcome to Speaking of History. My name is Eric Langhorst, and I'm an 8th grade American history teacher at South Valley Junior High in Liberty, Missouri. You're listening to a podcast that has a focus on education, technology, and history. Today's episode is number 79, and I'm recording this on April 6th, 2007. Well, we have a great episode for you tonight. Today I have an interview with author Tom Wheeler. Tom Wheeler is the author of a book entitled Mr. Lincoln's T-Mails, The Untold Story of How Abraham Lincoln Used the Telegraph to Win the Civil War. And this is a book that I read a little bit earlier this winter. It's a fascinating book. It has a really good connection between technology and history. And I learned a lot about the telegraph and about how Lincoln used it during his presidency to actually help win the Civil War. And I knew a little bit that the technology was there during the Civil War, the telegraph was used, but until I read Mr. Wheeler's book, I really didn't understand the connection and actually how effectively Abraham Lincoln used it in the day-to-day actions that he carried out while he was president. So without any further ado, here's an interview that I conducted today with Tom Wheeler talking about his book on how Abraham Lincoln used the telegraph during the Civil War era.
Well, I'm here today with Tom Wheeler. He is the author of a book entitled Mr. Lincoln's T-Mails, The Untold Story of How Abraham Lincoln Used the Telegraph to Win the Civil War. And this is a book that I read over the past winter, and I've really thought about it a lot over the last couple months. I'm obviously kind of a technology geek with the podcasting, but I also teach history, and so it's really a combination of two things that I'm really passionate about. And I really have been fascinated by the whole concept of Lincoln using the telegraph during the Civil War. And I guess I knew a little bit that the telegraph was used during the Civil War, but I never really understood the actual way that Lincoln used it. And that's one of the great things that I discovered from reading your book that I really appreciate. I was really surprised to find out that Lincoln was an early adopter of technology. I mean, you think of Lincoln as being somebody, you know, from Kentucky and the rural background and things. Did that surprise you at all when you started to find out how much Lincoln really integrated technology?
Yes, I'm with you, Eric. I was unaware of how technologically savvy he was. But, you know, the interesting thing is that he put that technology savvy to work at a time when it was actually crucial for our country.
Right.
He is the first president of the United States with access to a kind of electronic communications that we take for granted today. You have to stop and think that back during the middle of the 1800s, the idea of electricity was kind of a vague scientific concept. The light bulb hadn't been invented yet. And so the idea of sending messages by sparks of electricity was truly revolutionary. And the fact that Lincoln was able to understand how to use the new telegraph technology, despite the fact that no one in the history of the world in his kind of position had ever before had the ability. He had to, it was truly on-the-job training. He had to figure it out himself, and he had to do it in the midst of a civil war. That makes the story all the more amazing to me.
Right, and what I was amazed with was, I mean, not just did he use it, but how he used it. I mean, you talked about, for example, like, you know, he liked to do things by walking around. And he actually incorporated the use of the telegraph to actually do that with his generals in the field. And one of the things that I really have to stress as an 8th grade teacher is the fact that Lincoln was so frustrated with his generals. And this is just a great way to bring out, by actually looking at some of the text, you know, how frustrated he was with some of these guys and how he could literally manage the war from an outside location.
But, you know, Eric, again, the first person in history ever to be able to sit at the seat of government and have almost instantaneous contact with the battlefront.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he had to figure that out on the fly. But you can see him go through several stages in his adoption of the telegraph. For probably the first 14 months of his presidency, he was he seldom used the telegraph. He sent a dozen or so telegrams in the first 14 months. And then, as a result of the issue you just raised, the poor generals that he was saddled with, on May 24th, 1862, he had what I call his electronic breakout, in which he turned to the telegraph as a means of expressing his commands as commander-in-chief to generals in the field, and literally telling this general, move this way, another general, move another way, and have them executing the tactics that he himself had developed, and that he had to develop because they weren't.
Mm-hmm. Now,
if I can go one step further then, Eric, the other thing that became interesting about it was his third phase, when he gets the general that he and the country deserved in Ulysses Grant, that he again changes his leadership style and the way in which he uses the telegraph. And of course you would use the telegraph to extend your command voice. He then started using it as his ear, as listening. And he would read the telegrams that would come into the War Department between the generals and between the generals and the War Department, even if they weren't addressed to him. And he used that as his own kind of private keyhole into the generals' headquarters and their thinking. And then he would, again, interject himself, even if not invited, if he felt it was necessary.
Now, in researching the book, did you find anything really surprising that you didn't expect to find as you were researching it?
I think there were two things, Eric, that I really surprised me, or that I enjoyed the most in researching the book. The first was that I got closer to Abraham Lincoln than I ever thought possible.
Hmm.
The ability to read his documents in their handwritten form so that you can see the scratch-outs, you can see the insertions, you can see his mind at work, was a fabulous experience. And I also think that I began to realize, the second point, I began to realize that his telegrams are the closest thing we will ever have to a transcript of a conversation with Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
Because if you think about it, there are three ways that we know Lincoln's thinking. He didn't keep a diary or anything like this, so we know from his speeches, we know from his writings, and we know from his telegrams what was going on inside his head. But his speeches and his writings are different from his telegrams in that they are set pieces. He would agonize over them to make sure that they got just the right message across. They had a beginning, a middle, and an end. The pieces all fit together. They delivered a message and were designed to stand on their own. His telegrams were his top of the head, spur of the moment, this is where I am right now kind of thinking. And so that's why I say it's the closest thing we'll ever have to a transcript of a conversation with Abraham Lincoln.
Now, you were able to actually hold the actual documents themselves, correct, as you were doing some of the research?
Absolutely.
So, do you have a favorite telegram that Lincoln sent, if you could just pick one out?
Well, I think probably my favorite telegram is a telegram that he sent to his wife, Mary Todd, one day when she was in New York. She would travel a lot to get out of Washington, both the heat of Washington as well as the social scene and some of the pressure she didn't like. And so she was in New York with their 11-year-old son, Ted, and she sent a telegram to the president, which was, of course, highly unusual for couples at that point in time. It's not unusual for us to send telegrams to our spouses right now, but to send emails to our spouses right now, but it was a big deal to send a telegram. And she sent a telegram to her husband in which she said that she arrived safely in New York, hope you are well. And that was the end of all the pleasantries in the telegram. And then it went on and said, please send a draft for $50 to me, care of Mr. Warren Leland, Metropolitan Hotel, New York. And then in a run-on sentence, at the end, she tags on, Ted says, are the goats well? Because Ted, their 11-year-old son, was keeping pet goats at the White House. And, you know, Abraham Lincoln may have been president of the United States. This was in a period of time when he and Grant were getting ready for the Overland campaign. There were a lot of pressures on him. There were a lot of things going on. But he nonetheless snapped to and wrote a telegram back to his wife that said, the draft will go to you. In other words, the check's in the mail.
Yeah.
And then he says, tell Ted, father and the goats are very well. Dash, especially the goats. And I just think that that note is a fabulous insight into Abraham Lincoln, the pressures that he felt, and how he used humor as a refuge from those pressures.
It's interesting that you brought that one up, because I'm working on some lesson plans for using some of the telegraphs in some activities for my students for next year. And that was one of them that I was going to pick out to kind of show the humanistic side of President Lincoln and things like that. And then I was also going to pick one out where he's talking to Grant, and there's a quote in there, hold on with the bulldog grip.
Bulldog telegram.
Yeah, and chew and choke and all kind of stuff to kind of show, you know, what President Lincoln was trying to get across in that type of telegraph as well.
Well, it's interesting, you know, in the bulldog telegram, if you stop to think about it, it was August 1864. And those are pretty dark days.
Mm-hmm.
What was going on was that Confederate troops were again marching northward. Grant was stalled outside of Petersburg. There were draft riots in northern cities. There was an election coming up, and Lincoln was convinced he would lose. And in that kind of environment, he saw a telegram. Again, remember, he was reading the telegrams, even if they weren't addressed to him. He saw a telegram that Grant had sent to General Halleck, who was the Army Chief of Staff, in which he was worrying about whether the draft riots would sap troops from the front, and he was worried about the resolve that was in Washington as a result of the political situation that existed. And Lincoln responded. He took that telegram and he said, I have seen your dispatch. And then he says, hold on with a bulldog grip and chew and choke as much as possible. And when Grant received the telegram, he was handed the written out message by his telegraph clerk, and he was handed the message, and he started chuckling. And he looked to those around him, and he said, the president has more nerve than any of his advisors. And it was true. So Lincoln was using this technology to communicate his resolve to his general in the field, who was really a little worried about what the resolve of his boss, the president, was. And it was a masterful use of this new technology in an important leadership role.
Now, you've authored another book about leadership skills or lessons on leadership that we can gain from the Civil War.
Right.
What do you think is maybe the most powerful lesson that either politicians or business leaders could take away from the Civil War era?
Dare to fail. That the general or the leader who goes into an exercise expecting to fail or worried about what happens if will fail. That the difference, for instance, between Robert E. Lee and George McClellan, the Confederate Robert E. Lee and the Union General George McClellan, was that McClellan was always preparing for what happens if I lose. And Lee was always planning for victory.
Now, in your acknowledgments at the beginning, you credit your high school history teacher. And as an eighth grade teacher that teaches social studies today, one of the things that I face is the fact that there's kind of been a diminishing of social studies in our education system across the country. Social studies is not part of No Child Left Behind. As somebody that works, not outside of education, but in a different type of education, what's your thought on the idea of how we're teaching social studies today in the classroom and how important it is to our society?
Well, this is why, Eric, that I'm involved with the National Archives. Because I don't see how you can make decisions on the challenges that face us today unless you understand how people dealt with the challenges that faced them yesterday. And I don't mean that it's a cookie cutter where you say, well, so-and-so did thus and such, so clearly it's the kind of thing that the decision that I ought to make. No, it's not that. It is we need to have an understanding that our society is a give-and-take process, that our society is something that requires individual initiative and leadership, and we need to look to the results of what happened when individuals have stepped forward and what has happened when individuals have not stepped forward. You know, Napoleon had a great expression where he told his junior officers to study the great campaigns of the past. And he didn't tell them to study Caesar so that they would behave like Caesar, but he told them to study Caesar so that they would begin to understand the role of leadership, and so that when their moment came, they had something inside them upon which to draw that says, I know that there have been leaders before me and how they have acted. And I think the same is true for us as citizens. How do we act as citizens in today's society? How we act needs to be informed by our understanding of the good and the bad of how citizens acted before.
Now, you mentioned your work with the National Archives. I know the National Archives has done some incredible things with some of their educational initiatives recently. Are you currently involved in any projects that would be of interest to either like high school teachers or teachers across the country that teach history?
You bet. That's a great question, because literally last week we just opened an exhibit here in Washington at the National Archives, and then it's going to be traveling around the country for the next several years, called Schoolhouse to White House. And it is documents, records, report cards, book reports that they had to write, and this sort of thing about men who went on to become president of the United States.
Wow, so you mean it's like actual schoolwork from presidents?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wow. So how long will it be in Washington, D.C. then?
It'll be here through January, so that it is here through the through the tourist season and all of the school breaks, and then it will start touring first to the various presidential libraries that are around the country, and then hopefully thereafter to other venues.
All right. Well, I'll definitely include a link on the show notes to the archives site that has that specific information for the listeners. All right. Now, I did a podcast recently, and a blog entry on kind of a hypothetical question, a classical question. If you could have dinner with any three American history figures, who would they be? So I got to ask you, Mr. Wheeler, who would you invite to dinner if you could invite any three people from American history?
Well, I'm going to limit myself to the Civil War period.
Okay.
Okay? Because would I like to have dinner with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson? You bet. Okay. But let me limit myself to the Civil War period.
Okay.
And I would like to have dinner, obviously, with Abraham Lincoln. I would like to have dinner with Ulysses Grant. And I would like to have dinner with John Singleton Mosby, the Gray Ghost, a partisan ranger in the Confederacy, who, interestingly enough, after the war became a great friend of Grant's. I'm a great fan. In my first book, it becomes clear that I'm a great fan of Ulysses Grant, and so I would. Love to have dinner with those three.
There would probably be a pretty lively discussion, I bet, if you had those guys around the table together. So, well, thank you very much, Mr. Wheeler. It's a great book. I've recommended it to several other colleagues. And, in fact, when I purchased it at the bookstore, the person that checked me out said, oh, I just heard about this book, and I want to read it as well. So an excellent book that really, I think, kind of builds a bridge between the use of technology in, you know, the 1860s and what's going on today with all the different telecommunication things and text messaging and email and all those types of things. Just a really great marriage between history and technology.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you.
Well, there you have my interview with Tom Wheeler, the author of Mr. Lincoln's T-Mails, an excellent book. If you're someone that likes history, or if you're someone that likes technology, or if you like both, this is the perfect book for you to learn a little bit about how technology has impacted history, even in the Civil War era. And I've also put some show notes there, so you can check out some of the things that were discussed in the interview. And definitely check out the official website for the book. They've done an excellent job. There's pages that actually have the images of the messages, the telegraph messages that Lincoln has written. So if you're a teacher and you want to use some of these as primary sources into some of your lesson plans, you can go ahead and go to that page and actually pull up the image and then use that with your class. They also have some additional podcast interviews and some additional video interviews that have been done concerning Lincoln's use of the telegraph. So go ahead and check those out. And there's also some information on the official site on where to purchase the book and different things like that. So thanks again to Mr. Wheeler for taking the time out to conduct that interview with me today. And as always, if you'd like to leave a comment about this podcast, you can do so on the blog. You can find the blog at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com, and you can leave a comment to the post if you'd like, or if you'd like to contact me directly, you can send me an email at speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk again soon. Bye.
The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst in Liberty, Missouri, under a Creative Commons license. Visit the website for show notes and links to material in the podcast at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. The podcast is also available on iTunes. Please email all comments and questions to speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Background music for the intro is Z from James Underberg from PodSafe Audio. Thanks for listening.